He said he was. He said 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 he said. The court struck most of that down. Most importantly, it caused people to turn out and stand in line because these Republicans are trying to keep us from voting. There's also a dark vein of intolerance in some parts of the party. What do I mean by that? What I mean by that is they still sort of look down on minorities. How can I evidence that? When I see a former governor say that the president is shucking and jiving, that's a racial era slave term. When I see another former governor, after the president's first debate where he didn't do very well, says that the president was lazy. He didn't say he was slow, he was tired, he didn't do well. He said he was lazy. 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 He said he was
lazy. The new Boeing 787 is just now, the news is coming in that it's being grounded by the FAA.
Wow, what's going on with that?
There have been some reports of problems with electrical systems, and Japan Airlines and All Nippon had both grounded their fleet of the new Boeing jets, and now I guess the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration is following suit.
Well, yeah, we don't want planes crashing.
Well, it's a serious quality issue. Boeing is they've put a lot on this new airliner, which I have a hard time even understanding exactly. This plane isn't that big. I got to give Airbus the credit. Now, I know there were some initial quality issues with some of those. And the question is this the normal issue that happens when they roll out a jet, or is this something worse? And so that question is still out, because there are normal issues, but this seems to be pretty bad when the plane's being grounded.
Yeah, now, was it in flight and then grounded? Like, did it have passengers on the plane?
There was an incident recently where a concern about a battery, which they later found to be discolored and leaking electrolytes caused the plane to be landed at some airport where it wasn't planning to land, and people got out mm-hmm. on the slides.
Oh.
They just took the, are those inflatable, I don't know, slides out the side of the plane instead of waiting to pull in and get out at the terminal like a normal flight.
Well, that says something.
Yeah, they may have been out of an abundance of caution, but there appeared to be problems with the battery, and there's a large battery that I guess is made by a Japanese company, and so there's some real issues with this thing, and some question is this, you know, how big of a problem is this for Boeing, a company that used to be based in Seattle, now they're based in Chicago, although a lot of their operations are still in Washington, I think.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how they respond from a PR information perspective and how much they share with the public about what they've learned and what's wrong with it.
The plane is the newest generation of Boeing passenger jet. I think the Airbus that just came out not that long ago is actually an Airbus A330. This is a very ambitious plane. It's enormous. I'm getting the number wrong. I think it's a 380 that I'm. Let me see if that's the one. Four engine introduced in 2007 with Singapore Airlines. So this is a really big plane. 49% more floor space than the Boeing 747. Now, why is that the basis for comparison? Let's think about Boeing now and trends. This is really where this leads to is where's Boeing, you know, now, and where have they been going? The 747, the best passenger jet ever made, was designed and built by them in the 1970s. I think they may still continue to deliver new ones. I don't know. There's a lot of them out there, right? I've only flown in them once or twice. You know, some of those flights across the Atlantic.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're excellent planes. They're very nice. Great size, you know, great stability. I think there's just a luxurious feel, like that there isn't the kind of random vibrations and noises and stuff that you get in those petty, you know, Southwest kind of planes. What are those things, you know, 757s or whatever? What are those ones Southwest flies?
A lot of them fly 727s, yeah, or 757. 757s, I think, have the 252 or the 3242. I always think of it in coach terms, huh?
Well, sure.
They fly.
Yeah. It has 737s. Yeah, so Southwest, like, basically upgraded from 727s to 737s. And, yeah, those are junk. They're so small. I mean, they're all right. They're solid, you know, but they're not that great.
Well, we see Colin Powell.
But to those of us who are African Americans, the second word is shiftless, and then there's a third word that goes along with it.
Now, this Michael Richards thing. Well,
never been, I think, seen in the conventional, traditional way of we would describe a man of valor.
Okay, so some sound editing issues. This is a conversation that we just had. Like, I cut the conversation off, you know, so this is what we just said.
No, they're not.
And the question is, why is Boeing going down? 777 wasn't as good as 747, and it sounds like 787 sucks, too.
What do you think?
It's not a good trend. Okay, so that's what we just said, right? Mm-hmm. And now we're back in, like, real time. Because there's that, like, bumper that came up. But, you know, overall, like, I don't know why Boeing isn't being more ambitious with their you know what the big sale on this, on the 787 was?
What?
Fuel savings.
Oh.
I mean, and, you know, it's not that ambitious. And I mean, of course, fuel savings are important, but don't you want to have progress, too? Like, you know, if a computer manufacturer said this computer is just more efficient, isn't more efficient and more powerful, you know what I mean? Like, and then they've electrical systems are used for, like, brakes and all sorts of systems on this thing. So the batteries really can't fail. It's really a serious issue about whether this is well-designed and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. It's bad news. But, you know, it's like, the other thing about it, the continued mediocrity of big projects by corporate America, you know? Overfunded and under-delivering, like usual. And, you know who's probably overfunded, definitely under-delivers, now is BuzzFeed. People who might be familiar with the website BuzzFeed. It's a website that basically takes, I mean, they take stuff that other people have done, right? They aggregate it. I guess in a way, it's like a mega aggregator of web stuff for a little while. It kind of moved into the slot that boingboing.net used to inhabit, where they would aggregate not all the stuff on the web, not even all the essential stuff on the web, but like a broad mix of like semi-notable kind of interesting oddball stuff. But so news, you know, BuzzFeed has gained a lot of ambition, and they hired Ben Smith, who used to work at Politico. He used to have a blog at Politico. I actually used to read his blog, like, but when he joined BuzzFeed, he just got awful. Like, it just, now, okay, BuzzFeed is hiring. They've hired a guy who used to work at The Blaze, Glenn Beck's operation.
Oh boy, sounds like a real character.
I mean, BuzzFeed is just such a piece of garbage. That's all. I mean, you know, what else? Total garbage is the whole idea of eating horse. So, I listen sometimes to the podcast Linux Outlaws, and Fab from that show, he's talking about, he went on some tangent about recipes and German food, and I mean, I'm very open, right, about how I dislike German food. I was in Germany, and the food is no good there. It's terrible. I mean, look at how bad their wine is. Like, they have, like, you know, I don't really like white wine, you know, but their stuff, German wine, yeah, I think it's terrible. And I love French wine. Anyway, like, we don't need to get into that angle of it. What I'm saying is, he's talking about horse recipes, the way horse is prepared. What the fuck is wrong with him? Like, that's not cool. Like, you... How is it any better? Like, if people are disgusted by practices of dog eating in places like South Korea, and I don't know how common that is there these days, but, you know, that's some people talk about, some traditionally that was done, and people don't like that, right?
Right.
How is eating horse okay, like, in Germany?
I don't think eating any animal is okay. Whether it's a horse or a dog or a chicken or a pig. And I think once a society realizes that, we'll have reached a new level. So stop eating those horses, Germans.
Now, I haven't seen any episodes of this show, so you could tell me whether it has horses in it or not. But there's a show called Girls on HBO.
Yes, it's a pretty good show. I think the writer, director, creator, actress, star just won Golden Globe Awards, which was last Sunday, and she's pretty quirky and pretty fun. It's about mid-20-something girls, of course, searching for love and romance and everything in between with life and jobs and, you know, I don't want to call it a younger version of Sex and the City because I, you know, want this to stand on its own, but similar storytelling style. There's four women, all very different personalities, all facing life in a different way and a coming of age story, so to speak. But the writing is pretty witty and sharp and very honest and very real. And the main character is purposefully not very glamorous and pretty, and she's really starting to challenge a lot of Hollywood's concepts of beauty, and it's fascinating to watch, and I hope she does a good job. She just had a little run-in with Howard Stern, and of course Perez Hilton was involved and, you know, sort of making fun of her, but you know, she's strong and she'll stick to it.
I'm sorry about the chopper noise. Yeah. Well, okay. So, yeah. So, okay. So that's the star and
Is that the one? Is that the person that we were talking about? What's her name?
Yeah, Lena Dunham.
Okay.
She went to Oberlin, which is Oberlin College, in not too far from here, us here in Lakewood.
And yeah, somewhere like in Ohio, in the northern part of Ohio.
Yeah, and she's done the film Tiny Furniture, and then this show on HBO, which is backed by Judd Apatow, which may change your opinion of the show now.
No, I mean, you know, I think you got to look at it. Yeah, because I haven't seen it, so I don't know. You got to look at that as something that may not mean much, because if you think about it, haven't you heard of projects where there was like a name drop, like an executive producer of a name that you liked, the director that you liked or actor that you liked, and it turns out they were just kind of lending their name maybe to a friend's project, maybe even in a well-meaning way, but it's not very good, you know, like, yeah. So the inverse could apply too, because I do not like Judd Apatow or his work, and I think that kind of stuff is worthless dreck, and it doesn't interest me at all. But if he's just, you know, like an executive producer type and helping fund it or something, because he, you know, maybe is friendly with some of the people doing it or whatever the background is, that doesn't make it. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean his creative touch is necessarily going to be in that thing, right? Yeah, that's how. So I had heard about her before, Lena Dunham, but I didn't really pay attention to it. And then I saw that. So you said Howard Stern. He was talking shit about her or something, saying nasty shit or something.
Yeah, and so she called in the show, I guess, on Monday, and one of the comments that she made, you know, Howard kind of made some reference to her being fat, and looking like the kid from one of those horrible other Judd Apatow movies.
And it doesn't look like, I mean, I've only seen like one or two pictures of her, but that doesn't really describe the her at all, does it? Is she?
No.
She's not at all heavy,
she's,
really.
She's not, but she made this comment that said, you know, I'm not something about like I'm not thin, but I'm thin for Detroit or something like that.
Yeah, she's definitely thin for most parts of the country. Yeah. We don't need to talk about the way people are in LA. That can be insane and weird, but yeah, like in the regular part of the country, she would definitely be a thin person from the one or two pictures I've seen her. And it's not my place to judge, and I don't care, but yeah. Anyway, so kind of one of those kinds of, like, trumped-up kinds of attacks on her, where it's really baseless anyway, even if that's not okay to just say about somebody anyway.
Yeah. So I think she's going to be a interesting character to watch, and you know, she's got her second season going, so HBO at least picked her up for a second season, and that started last Sunday. I bought the season on iTunes, so I will probably do the same, because I don't like to wait in between shows, especially when they're good.
So how fast can you get them lagging against, like, HBO? Because we don't have HBO, right?
We don't, so I don't know. Probably, maybe in the fall? I don't know. We'll have to see how fast they do that.
Really? You can't get it very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I should do some research, but I just feel like that HBO model is just so outdated.
I know.
And I don't want to pay. You know, a lot of people say this, which I think is actually a discredit to their brand, but they're like, I paid for HBO just to watch this show. You know, and some people have said that about Girls. And it's like, I don't want to do that, because I don't want those horrible, like, 3-star movies to be on. I don't know how much a subscription is.
But yeah.
I just rather have it on iTunes, because then I can watch it on my TV, on my iPad, on my iPhone, wherever I want to watch it. So it's just outdated. And I don't know. I just really wish streaming movies, content, new releases, stuff could just get more modern and just, you know, think of the consumers and think how you can make, you know, a business around serving the consumers.
Yeah.
In the way that they want to be served.
And of course, it's like, is it fair to call piracy the elephant in the room here? Like, you know, these things can be acquired. Maybe the demographic for that girl show. I mean, there's plenty of women though that might use a torrent or something like that anyway. And is this show, are guys watching this show?
Good question. I don't know. I'll have to look on the Twitter sphere. It's pretty girl problem centric. It is called Girls, but it is pretty, you know, about.
So they're girls. They're young women. They're not they're young women though.
Yes, but right. They're kind of acting like girls.
Oh, okay.
So, and I think in the essence of they're acting childish at times or unsure at times or not quite yet a woman, don't really know what to do. You're kind of a girl. What is that? What do you call people that? You know, what do you call women?
Yeah.
You know, because they're not really women, you know, like from this idea of women have it together or whatever.
Yeah, and that's maybe it's an underexplored phenomenon these days. It's like just because young men these days are such a mess doesn't mean there aren't a lot of young women that aren't kind of a bit all over the place too, or still trying to figure things out or whatever, living a long adolescence and then a longer youth well into their 20s and then 30s, and that's something that must be happening on the other side of the coin. But usually, like in the movie, it's the guy that doesn't have things together and it's the woman who's trying to bring him along. But obviously there's got to be times when it's the reverse.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, like, the cast is really good. And if you've watched her first film, Tiny Furniture, you'll see a lot of the similar characters. I think Alex Karpovsky is in Tiny Furniture, and also Jemima Kirk. I'm obsessed with Jemima Kirk. She is British. She has this long, blonde, flowing hair. She just has this way about her, and she just is such a cool character, very fun and vivacious and lively, and she's just cool. I just like them. The great casting. Allison Williams is this beautiful, tall redhead. I think it's Zosiah Mamet. She's this sort of uptight virgin, and, you know, all the issues that go with being a virgin, and everybody's having sex, and she's not, and... You know, just hysterical comedy and real, like, she cuts to it. She does the things that we all do, but nobody wants to show, and she shows it. And it's liberating, you know, and it's hysterical to laugh at yourself and go, yeah, I do that too. Oh my God. Yep. You know, it's a good one. So I'd recommend it. Get the first season, check it out. And if you have HBO, watch it. And if not, wait. Till it comes out.
That's a recommendation. Well, you know, it sounds at least like maybe there is a strain of emotional honesty in it that I would value. It's hard to say because, you know me, I'm pretty out of the loop about a lot of TV and pop culture these days. But, you know, there are things that I like on occasion. And maybe if that has a real thoughtful, you know, kind of emotional underpinning that's... You know, maybe it's pretty powerful. Maybe I'll enjoy watching it. I guess I'll have to watch an episode or two with you, and then, you know, and go from there.
Okay. Sounds good.
Well, here we come into the DJMCloud.com podcast
episode number 66. As we come into the next segment with a bit of Johnny Marr's new song. You know, Smith's guitarist Johnny Marr hasn't actually had an official solo debut yet. Now, granted, the last time the Smiths released an album was 1987, Strange Ways, Here We Come. But since then, he's actually done a number of musical projects, notably in the 90s. He had a project with Bernard Sumner of New Order called Electronic. They had a few good songs.
Okay.
They had one with Neil Tennant of the Pet Shop Boys on vocals. They had some with Sumner on vocals. After that, I think you might recall that you bought me. We went to Amoeba Music on Haight Street in San Francisco back in like 2003 or so, and you bought me some music, and I really like the Chemical Brothers that you got me. Although they still weren't as, you know, at the height of like where they were in the 90s, but it was still pretty good stuff. But there was some unfortunate disappointment in the Johnny Marr Healers record. And that was like his band in like the early zeros. It was like it was the Healers or Johnny Marr and the Healers, and I think that was kind of a slump in his career. I wasn't really a big fan of that stuff. So I'm gonna be optimistic about this new stuff. And you know, I think that song sounds okay. It's, you know, it's just a basic kind of track to start out as like a single, and then, you know, you go from there, see what he does. And he actually did a deal not that long ago with Fender. He has his own Fender Jaguar.
Nice.
It's a very beautiful guitar, you know, the kind that Kurt Cobain used, among other people. The Jazzmaster is a very similar guitar, but I think the one he was is a Johnny Marr Jaguar. It's definitely one of those two. It's a great guitar, you know. I really, that's a definitely a very cool a guitar for guitars that are not semi hollow. That's probably like the coolest like guitar out there, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, I mean, along with the Telecaster and the Les Paul. You know, when people are watching their you know, like if you're watching videos, if you're watching movies and stuff like that, you know, a lot of times people still have DVDs, right? Don't you think like I know I was given a DVD at Christmas, and that's fine, I can play DVDs, but like, you know, it's not like it's really a standard to give Blu-rays, even though that's the only HD format out there. Most people have HD televisions now, and I mean, we just got our first HD television last year, but we're, you know, a lot of people have gotten them by now, people have devices that can drive HD, like Apple TV. We have one of the Apple TVs that's 1080, supports 1080p, and we have a PlayStation 3, you'll play Blu-ray, 1080p, stuff like that. Not everybody has a Blu-ray player, but it's like a standard to give DVD, no big deal, right? Even though that's like 480p, like standard definition. Like, so even that hasn't moved up in terms of physical media driving. And I know a lot of people, you know, get video from iTunes or AirPlay it now, so you can like AirPlay like your movies or shows with the iPad and the Apple TV, right? But I mean, AirPlay's not perfect, right? We have issues with it at times.
Yeah, which I guess is understandable, you know, because it's going through the air. But I wish it worked a little bit better.
Maybe they'll continue to improve it, because it is you know, like tonight when I tried to just to play a video off YouTube, it worked really well, the sound and everything. But getting it all to work at this, you know, can be a little unpredictable at times. But how many people are going to want to get a 4K TV? That's kind of what I'm leading up to here. You know, these TVs are like, they're like, instead of like 1080p, they're like double that. They're like 2000-something p.
I haven't seen one, but I mean, they'll, if they can do a good job marketing it, you know, giving us reasons as to why we want this 4K TV, then I'm sure people will want it. I mean, remember how expensive these TVs used to be?
Yeah, I think they're going to get in a market. You know what? They're going to get an early adopter market. They really rolled that out at CES. Now, a lot of people, you know, the last couple of years, they really pushed 3D at CES. And you'll hear people say that, well, pretty much everybody that buys a new TV gets 3D. But I don't think that's even true anymore. By the time we got our TV last summer, the 3D trend was well done, right? And I don't think we didn't buy a TV with 3D capability. We didn't go out of our way looking for one. But we got like a mid-range TV, a pretty good TV, right? That didn't have that, you know, as a so-called feature. Not, you know, like we didn't really, we didn't want it. But so anyway, so that seems to have subsided. What they're pushing now is they're pushing the idea of 4K because they want to get people to buy new TVs, right? And right. So yeah, the question is, are they going to push it past the early adopters, the enthusiasts, the people like, you know, my brother Jim wants stuff to move to 4K, but that's, you know, he's into the cutting edge technologies, and he has sharp vision. He looks at like you know, the graphics on video games and movies, and he wants them to get better. He wants them to be more accurate, and you know, he's the cutting edge of the market. I mean, there are people that would appreciate that, but I don't know what they're going to be willing to pay. Like, there's going to be an elasticity. It's not going to be, you know, I don't know when the middle adopters are going to come in. I think they came in pretty early for HDTV. It was pretty successful in that respect, right? But Blu-ray, look at Blu-ray. Has the middle adopter market really moved in? That's PS3 buyers, right? But how many people are buying Blu-ray players? You know? And even PS3, I mean, they sell, but isn't Xbox and Nintendo both selling more right now? I'm not sure. But they're all selling some, but you know, I'm not sure that, you know, Blu-ray hasn't really taken off the way that DVD did and then HDTV did. So that, you know, that's the current stack in a lot of ways for a lot of people. Even if maybe they have a Blu-ray player, but they often play DVDs in it, but some people just have the DVD player still, right? Mm-hmm. And so what I maybe what if we look at those? You know, what if we look at how people are doing a lot of mobile personal stuff, so maybe there's going to be a decline in those large screens. Then also, so there's this article I linked to in the show notes, and you can find the show notes at djmcloud.com. Look for podcast 66. They're talking about the room that you need. Basically, you need a lot of space to be able to appreciate the large, you know, TVs, and they might curve the edges of them. Like it's a different kind of thing. It's, you know, it's going to have more resolution. It's just the question is this going to be adopted by anyone but the cutting edge consumers? And here's the real issue. What about content? Think about a pyramid of all the content that was created before like 2000 or so. Other than stuff that you can re-edit, that you can reissue by doing a new film transfer onto 1080p or whatever. Like, there's a lot of stuff that's just in 480p, like old TV shows and a lot of content. Now, so that's like the bottom of the pyramid. And then there's the higher part where you have HD content. Think about the tiny tip of the triangle at the very top where you're going to have this ultra HD or 4K content where it's double 1080p. How many people have cameras to do that right now? There aren't many, right? HD 1080p is the current standard. And a lot of people are catching up to that. And so there's the Red cameras. That brand is really pushing their, you know, 4K capable cameras, and not just Sony, but I think other companies like LG are introducing 4K TVs. But the question is really, first of all, how easily are people going to be able to enjoy the content? Like, we can plug our HD camera into our HD TV and watch it, right? Like, you know, that experience, how many people are going to get Red cameras? Pretty pricey still. And then where are you going to get this ultra HD content? And of course, you can get new higher res film transfers from old classics, from popular movies, but you know, in terms of a lot of the content. And then like YouTube is pretty much caught up to like HD, right? Vimeo, those places you can upload 1080p content. How about this next level? Like, when is the, you know, YouTube creator going to catch up to that? When is the YouTube viewer going to catch up to a computer that can handle that?
I don't know.
Yeah. So, I guess, you know, 4K looks cool, but it's going to be a while probably before I, you know, work in 4K in any way or feel any need to. I feel like, you know, if you deliver HD content to clients, if you're doing video projects, I think that's still going to be the standard for now rather than ultra HD. But, you know, I guess, you know, the change can happen quickly. You know, it depends on, I think, that middle adopter group for now.
Right.
Well, there's a lot of talk in the blogs on the internet about Aaron Swartz, who died of an apparent suicide. And apparently he was found hanged in his apartment in Brooklyn.
Yeah, but you think there's some suspicion there?
I think it sounds strange. I don't know that there's any reason for suspicion. Hanging? Doesn't that just sound strange?
Yeah. And well, he was the hacker coder?
I guess he was known as a hacker in the on the internet. He led some of the protests against SOPA when PIPA and SOPA were being pushed as like basically internet censorship bills. There was a lot of protests all around the internet. But this is a guy who had been involved at Reddit, and then he had his own like web content management system, web.py. Yeah, I'm not really a Python guy, so I don't really know too much about it, but he did that, and he also was involved in the RSS 1.0 spec, and you know, he worked on that as a very young man. So he accomplished a lot on the web and in programming and in activism. But unfortunately, he apparently decided to kill himself. But I don't know. It just seems strange and suspicious. But he was under indictment for downloading academic articles at MIT. Apparently that's a serious crime that the prosecutors had to get involved with at a high level, and there's a lot of backlash going on about that in Massachusetts, or, well, around the world, but about the way it was handled there. I guess JSTOR, which is this online journal archive, some of the stories that are being repeated, I don't know, that they didn't really push a prosecution. They didn't think this was like a criminal kind of offense.
Right.
And MIT kind of equivocated on it. I don't know. And they kind of like let themselves act as like an aggrieved party in a criminal theory, a criminal case, which was used against him.
Okay.
So I don't know. You know how... I think maybe there's a lot of different angles to this story. It's a very unfortunate story. It also I think is an appropriate response to people that talk up the hacker culture at MIT, and I put that in quotes. The reputation that, you know, MIT's cool, Harvard may not be cool, but MIT is, yeah, that doesn't seem very cool, you know, what they were doing. And I would say, you know, the idea of like these powerful institutions, you know, connected to rich people and the establishment being like, you know, useful hotbeds of hackers is an outdated idea. I know there's stories about the 70s, but I don't really need to hear any more of them. I've heard enough of those. You know, the Lisp coders of the Harvard Yard and Cambridge area of the 70s and 80s. You know, I mean, it's one of those things. This hacker culture thing is it's very strange. And like, there was this extreme outpouring of grief, but I think you know, the real story is just this one person, you know, killing himself. Like, it wasn't, it's, people want to make it a, I mean, there's so many blog posts where people just made it about themselves, you know, their angle on it. And I guess, you know, it seems to me that people are trying to turn the ship around pretty quickly on this guy's reputation. Like, it sounds like he was sort of a jerk. And in order for them to have a martyr, they're going to have to kind of rebuild his, like, you know, his image. You know, like, because people will say, you know, like, he was intelligent and kind, but then would he call himself a sociologist, and he would sometimes use his knowledge of people to hurt them or something like that. I mean, it sounds like a manipulative asshole to me. You know, yeah. I don't know. And then the whole thing of people always, they always like, swaddle themselves in self-importance when someone they know commits suicide. It's ridiculous. Like, well, what could I have done differently? Like, there's some, like, critical things they could have done or something like that, you know?
Yeah.
Again, assuming he did kill himself, because it seems kind of bizarre to hang yourself. You know, and this guy was a pretty major hacker. I just wonder, like, what kind of stuff somebody like that would get involved in. And, you know, you could easily get involved with the wrong people, like when Bradley Manning went to that scumbag, Adrian Lomo, and told him about what he was doing, apparently, allegedly, involving getting documents that were eventually released by WikiLeaks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this community of hackers, and they're all basically, it's so infiltrated by the intelligence agencies. These guys are all either spooks or wannabe spooks. And, you know, like this Adrian Lomo piece of shit, worthless fucking goon. Because not only does he go narc on Bradley Manning, who's doing like a heroic act of being a whistleblower, a corrupt, you know, war crimes committing military, you know, series of operations, and what was going on, you know, I mean, he was just bringing to light a lot of the terrible abuses that were going on in Iraq and Afghanistan, and, you know, like, this scumbag, Eugene Lomo, he talks like he's, like, it's some patriotic duty or something to do this. Like, who's doing the patriotic duty? It's somebody like Manning risking, like, a lot to try to let his fellow citizens know stuff that he could see and he could see was wrong. And, you know, so, you know, you don't want to get involved with the wrong people with these hackers. That's for sure. But what you do want to do, whether or not you're a hacker, is subscribe to the podcast. Now, hacker, you know, that's a misunderstood word, right? Now, it's better to avoid it these days, frankly, just because of the way the media's ruined it. But what people who've been conditioned by a typical mainstream media will hear when someone says hacker, they will hear the word cracker. Like, so, and that's the hacker term for what people say hackers. Do you know what I mean? Like, so somebody that's breaking into stuff and doing, you know, and maybe erasing stuff or damaging, you know, online resources, breaking, you know, that's cracking. That's being a cracker. A hacker would be like, you want to create an alternative system and make it, and program your own thing on your own server and not break compromising someone else's Now, of course, there's always gray areas and there's areas that, go in between, but somebody whether you fit, whatever, I'm not, it's not for me to judge what you do. If you can subscribe to the podcast by going to dgmcloud.com, and then right now we have a link up there that's like the iTunes logo, but it's like the CD thing. Or you could search for DJM Cloud on iTunes. You could just be, looking at the podcast directory, or get the podcast app from Apple, or search for us in Downcast or Instacast, if you're using iOS. If you're using Android, I don't have a recommendation because we talked about that one on the show, but I'm still looking for a better one.
Okay.
Definitely, I'm going to check out Jessica's website, jessica.sf3am.com. Thank you for joining me, Jessica.
Thanks for having me.
This has been the DJM Cloud podcast. It has been recorded Wednesday, January 16th, 2013, and it's been hosted by me, Dan McKeown, and Jessica. Well, and the nice thing is, even if we went a little long at the end there, that's the end, so people can be like tuning out, or maybe they're listening but they're looking down and reading like their Twitter feed, or they're looking at RSS reader and they're just flipping by, and so there's talk in the background, but you're reading, you're doing your thing, maybe going for a walk.
I can't read and listen to a podcast at the same time.
Right, that means, but if you're tuning it out, it starts becoming background talk. Like maybe at some point when I just kept going on and feeling people like, well, when's Jessica gonna get back in that conversation? And they're like, I guess not, and then they start going, that's when you go to the Twitter feed and then you're reading that. And so basically people, I'm kind of just assuming that's not all the listeners, but some listeners might just be like, they might just be kind of cruising with us now, but in a way it's probably going into their brain, a complex thing, right? And that's something we can preview for the next show, or a future show. I was thinking about how I really think I'm gonna investigate the possibility of writing a book about memory. Do you think that would be a good subject for me to write about?
Yeah.
So I think people would be interested in maybe the insights that I have, not based on my personality, but based on, my ability to remember things.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be like a carnival stunt thing.
I don't think that.